Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multi-million-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket, you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Rez. I'm Jeanette, your host, and here we're on episode 48, The Nurse Philanthropist. So, Lewis, how have you been? What are you going to talk to us about today?
Jeanette Garcia, my host, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
We're terrific today, and I hope everyone listening, all two of you, enjoy this podcast. This one is about the nurse philanthropist.
Mm-hmm. Who was this?
Her name was Ida. And she was actually my wife's aunt.
Oh.
It's true. All these stories are true. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable what happens to me. I don't create them. They're true.
Quite the life.
Well, she was an interesting lady. Ida certainly was not a rich woman. She blended in just like any other New Yorker in high heels, walking briskly on 2nd Avenue, never looking up towards the high buildings, and always going someplace in a hurry, sort of bouncing along. You know, New Yorkers don't look up.
Yeah.
You could tell people from out of state, they're all looking up at those high buildings.
Yeah, amazed.
New Yorkers just look straight ahead.
Right.
There was nothing rich about Ida. In fact, it was just the opposite. Aunt Ida lived in a tiny third-floor apartment on the east side of New York City. Namely, she lived on East 52nd Street, just off the corner of 2nd Avenue. The building had seen its better days. The lobby was a bit worn, with armchairs and a red sofa all threadbare, faded, and ready for recovering, all having outlived their time. The tarnished and scarred metal elevators were rattling, and on the edge of being obsolete. The doorman looked tired. Mm-hmm. He needed a haircut. His uniform was wrinkled, and it was a rent-controlled building. The management was doing its best to encourage the tenants to move out so that they could convert it into a co-op.
And what was her apartment like?
Her apartment. Ida's apartment, if you could call it that, consisted of one room.
Oh.
Just one room. There was a metal front door with two locks and a peephole, and that opened into a small, dark vestibule. And to the right was a medium-sized closet, which held all of Ida's clothes, and they were crammed in there. And on the left was a small, windowless bathroom with a toilet, a sink, with a medicine cabinet, and a 5-foot porcelain shower tub that I don't know how you could sit in it, but you could stand in it.
Wow.
The only room of the apartment had a large bed, a stuffed tan chair in the corner, a small dark table with two chairs, and an old light brown throw rug, partially hiding scratched wooden floors. That was it.
And I'm guessing it was immaculate because she was a nurse, so.
Well, curtains covered the two windows, and everything had a fine coat of dust.
Oh.
And it needed a good cleaning. The kitchen was directly connected to the bedroom, and it was more like a closet, with a miniature old gas stove and an old refrigerator and a sink. The wall cabinets were painted white many years ago and now were closer to a faded yellow.
Hmm.
Dishes of a good quality were on the shelves, but they were unmatched, a combination of leftover pieces from old chinaware, and there were plastic cups and saucers of various colors, tan, brown, yellow, that typified Ida's life.
Oh, yeah, it seems pretty glum, not gonna lie.
Yeah, well, it was fortunate that Ida was only about 5'2" tall, and she could manage in that tiny apartment. Right. She thought how conveniently located it was and how little effort it took to maintain, and it was hers, inexpensive, and no cleaning women to deal with. Ida's husband, Abe, was a life insurance salesman and was also somewhat short. They had married later in life. Each of them were around 45 years old and had lived there together until Abe died.
Oh, and so was Ida all alone?
Yeah, Ida's closest friend, and for that matter, her only living relative, was Sarah, also short, chesty, and feisty. They were half-sisters, and Sarah had been a successful cosmetics representative and broker. Sarah had divorced her first husband, who had been a drinker, gambler, and womanizer, and then married a very, very wealthy yarn manufacturer. And they had a large apartment on Fifth Avenue, furnished like the interior of an Italian castle. They had their own Cadillac limo. That was the big limousine with a full-time chauffeur. And the chauffeur wore a costume. He had boots and a hat and gloves. And
very fancy.
Yeah, they had a 17-acre estate in Pound Ridge, New York, which is a very, very elegant place. Ida was the poor relative. And she and Abe were often invited to visit, but they could never reciprocate. So it was a one-way relationship economically, and Ida was always on the taking end. She felt as though Sarah talked down to her, and Sarah was, in fact, pretty haughty, snapping at the maid and the cook and anyone else who was beneath her social or economic level. However, Ida wasn't all that restrained either, and she made cutting retorts. But neither had any brothers or sisters, so they all got along as best as they could, Ida taking and Sarah belittling.
I take it Ida was the nurse, right? So what? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that's right. Ida was a private nurse. She was trained in Boston, and Abe was a disbarred attorney forced to sell life insurance. Mm. They had lived quietly. The only trips they went on were on the insurance company's conventions, sometimes in Chicago. Ida had never been on a cruise or even ventured out of the country. She was still quite good-looking. She had dark hair, and it matched her eyes, which were set quite a bit apart. She spoke directly to you with a sharp yet throaty voice. One couldn't help but notice her round face with the high cheekbones, turned-up nose, and the full red lips. And she was rather busty. In fact, she was very busty, particularly for a short woman. Ida dressed nicely with what she had. Her clothes were out of date. They had a worn look, but she was nice. She was clean. And after Abe died, she didn't go out for meals, and she spent much of her time as a volunteer at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital.
Yeah, it sounds like Ida was up against it and pretty poor, huh?
Well, she was a little down, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whenever my wife and I were in New York, we found time to take out Aunt Ida for dinner. And since she had no children, we were the only close relatives. She would hold my arm as we walked her back to the apartment building. One evening she stopped. She looked me in the eyes and pressed my hand into her. Her eyes were clear, dark, brown, large, open, and unblinking. And slowly she said, "You are the only people who care for me. I would like you to be my personal representative, and I want to leave my estate to you."
Oh, that's moving. It's very sad, but also means a lot about you and her. So were you excited to receive the entire estate?
Yeah, I was very flattered. My first reaction was surprise. Mm-hmm. Then I appreciated her thoughtfulness, and I did some quick calculating. Ida couldn't have very much money. She certainly didn't have much by way of personal property. She dressed neatly but inexpensively. She had no significant jewelry, no car, never offered to pick up a check. She didn't have a full-time job. Her income was probably limited to part-time private nursing, Social Security, and any benefits she might receive as a World War II widow. Abe had been a sergeant in the Army in World War II. Mm. And her situation was shown clearly by how she lived. She couldn't have had more than $10,000, and it would be uncomfortable for me and for my wife to take any money from her.
Right. Yeah, no, I can imagine. And yeah, it doesn't sound like she would have much of a large estate.
No. So I said, "Aunt Ida, thank you so much, but we really have no need for your money, and we do want to keep our relationship with you free from any benefit we might get if you passed away." However, I would be pleased to serve as your estate representative. Why don't you leave your money to charity?
Yeah, that was a good idea.
Well, she seemed satisfied, evidently realizing that we really didn't want to profit from our relationship with her.
Mm-hmm.
And things went along for a number of years, with my wife calling her every week, usually on a Sunday, and our taking her out to dinner when we were in New York City.
That's nice that you all went out, and it sounds like a pretty common, you know, relationship.
Yeah, it was nice. In the meantime, mm-hmm. my mother-in-law, Sarah, and her husband both passed away.
Oh.
And Ida was now working regularly as a private nurse, but she was always in civilian clothes, traveling around the country with her patient, Marvin Weinkris, the famous founder and CEO of Major Car Rentals.
Mm.
They were in Florida, and that's all changed. It's mm-hmm. a huge car rental company, and his name wasn't Marvin Weinkris, and he's passed away.
Mm.
So you can find out the biggest rental company, and you can figure out that's who it was.
Ah.
And they were in Florida for the winter, then in Arizona the next year, then back in New York. She spoke very caringly of him, and he clearly held her in high regard. She was wearing new, very stylish clothes.
Well, yeah, it sounds as though she finally got a good job and is kind of stepping up and things are improving, right?
Right. My wife took the phone call from the New York hospital. They said, we found your name as a relative of Ida Lowenthal's in the records. Your aunt has suffered a major stroke and is in poor condition.
Oh, no.
She will be hospitalized for at least 10 days, and then she will require full-time attendant or nursing care when she is discharged. We suggest that you make necessary arrangements.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you had your hands full there.
Well, it was a very clipped telephone call,
mm-hmm.
and it really, a curtain of responsibility descended on us.
A lot dropped on your lap.
That we weren't prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't do very much for Ida, since there was no, she was out. We couldn't do anything for her. We couldn't find a written designation of the healthcare surrogate, nor of the guardian. And the will that she had left everything to Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital, and I was designated as her personal representative.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that sounds bad.
Well,
so
it was worse than we imagined. Ida was installed in a hospital bed in her apartment. She had been comatose since the stroke and was unable to communicate in any manner. She lay in bed, totally limp, in a fetal position, with her eyes open but unfocused, not uttering a sound. Was her mind functioning? Could she hear me? Was she aware of what happened, what was happening?
That's so sad. So what did you all do?
I tried to communicate with her.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Ida, if you can hear me, make a sign, any sign, move a finger, wink, stick your tongue out, moan, anything. Nothing, nothing. I kept trying. She just stared vacantly at the ceiling. Every once in a while, I would try it, and every once in a while, I would hope for a response. Nothing.
Ugh, that's terrible. Absolutely horrible. And so what happened?
Well, life seemed to move along slowly. The daily routine for Ida just seemed to go on and on. The practical nurse supplied by Medicare came twice a week to visit. The hospital had selected a private agency who sent out a full-time LPN, licensed practical nurse, and she was a thin Jamaican lady, about 60 years of age, with a clipped way of speaking. And we didn't select her. She had been picked by the hospital before we came into the picture, before we became guardians.
Right.
She had gone through the apartment, and anything of value was now gone. Not that there was very much,
mm-hmm.
but she found the checkbook, and she was signing Ida's name to her checks, paying Ida's bills, and paying the agency, the nursing agency, and in addition, giving herself a nice allowance, which she said was for transportation and meals.
Wow, you guys got ripped off, and it absolutely just taken advantage of, really.
Well, if we kept looking, and if there had been any document authorizing a medical manager or granting control over her assets, it was gone. We suspected the nurse for destroying it. There was no stopping her from writing checks and milking Ida's bank account. We filed to be appointed joint guardians, and despite being admitted to the practice of law in New York State, the judge required us to take a course in guardianship law. He was a political appointee who had played the piano and served drinks at the Democratic Club in Brooklyn while he was waiting for a judicial appointment.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he doesn't sound like a nice guy.
No, he wasn't. And Ida was a zombie. She didn't utter a word or make a sound. The state sent a doctor to the apartment every week to check on her condition. She was being fed through a tube. The LPN, or the licensed practical nurse, who the agency provided, was supposed to make sure that Ida was kept clean and that the feeding tube was in place. We would sometimes arrive to find the nurse out for cigarettes, leaving Ida all alone.
Oh my goodness, that's awful. And definitely neglectful, too.
Well, Ida's checkbook showed quite a bit of money. Hundreds of thousands of dollars were gradually being eaten up by the LPNs, the nurses. There would be nothing left in 3 years. We were now her official guardians, and we replaced the nurse who had been having a free-for-all with Ida's bank account. I started paying Ida's bill myself.
And were you able to find the missing documents?
No. I went through everything. I did find a Servco health insurance policy buried in there with some old bills in one of Ida's desk drawers. It provided for nursing care for medical service. No premiums had been paid for over 6 months, and there was a notice of termination in Ida's unread mail.
Oh.
The policy did not provide for payment for care for personal maintenance, such as grooming, feeding, or bathing, personal hygiene, or cleaning services, which were basically what was being provided, mm-hmm. and it covered only medically required nursing services performed by a registered nurse.
Were you able to get it reinstated?
Well, a letter on my lawyer letterhead, along with a check for the past premiums and the citation of the law providing for reinstatement of a policy if the owner was disabled and unable to make premium payments, supported by the hospital records and a letter from the state doctor and some follow-up threats, and bingo, the policy was back in effect.
And how did you prove that it was medically necessary that the nursing services were being rendered?
Well, the nursing agency had a standard work form. It was a challenge. And the standard work form itemized the daily nursing activities, which were almost always related to non-medical services. So I created a new form showing the daily medically related activities, such as examining the placement of the various tubes, cleaning the tubes, taking Ida's temperature, pulse, and blood pressure, examining the body for lesions and bed sores, physical therapy, a therapeutic massage, nutritional evaluation, and each nurse checked various boxes and signed the form going back to the inception of the stroke. And the agency also signed off on it. The state doctor was really helpful in creating the new form, and he certified that the nursing services were medically necessary and performed by LPNs instead of registered nurses in order to save the insurance company large sums of money, and that we would be pleased to change over to more expensive RNs if they instructed. We were now over $300,000 deep in nursing care, and Ida was running short of money.
Now, you would get reimbursed from the services, or no?
No. Mm. Servco denied the claim.
Mm.
And the guardianship judge didn't even look up from reading our petition. We petitioned to sue. And he grumbled and he said, I heard enough. And he denied the petition and he refused to allow us to retain attorneys on an hourly fee basis or even to pay a legal retainer fee. Nor would he allow payment of the cost for filing suit. I sought in vain for a New York law firm that would handle the claim solely on a contingency basis. None would. Most of them didn't think that we would be successful because Ida was comatose and almost all of the nursing care was going for grooming. One of the attorneys, who was also a nurse, said that Ida could remain in her present vegetative state for 20 years or more. Other nurses confirmed this.
So what could you do?
Well, I had to do some thinking. How could I get Servco to reconsider? They kept getting harder and more set in their denial of the claim. I spoke to their supervisor in North Carolina. He said there would be no compromises from Servco, no settlement.
What did he say?
He said, read the policy. There's no coverage and we will fight this to the end.
Wow. And what'd you do?
I prepared a lawsuit, but I had no office in New York and I had no ability to work out of any office in New York. So it's amazing what a little extra effort can produce. It occurred to me that the Exeter Trust Company had an office on Fifth Avenue in New York. They managed our personal funds and had all kinds of connections in the business world. Maybe Exeter Trust could help. That's not the real name, but it's close.
Yeah.
They did some digging, and they found that Servco was a subsidiary of Ionic Company, a Wall Street holding company, and that Mark Chester Burnell, a socialite, was the CEO of Ionic. They obtained his home address in Tuxedo, New York, and even supplied me with his nickname, Sandy.
And what'd you do next?
Well, Ida was lying in her curled-up position in her hospital bed, staring vacantly at the ceiling, and I was up near the ceiling on a big ladder over her with a camera, taking pictures of her vacant look with three sets of tubes coming out of her mouth and stomach. The color 8x10 photo was on top of the claim letters and the medical file and reports and bills. My accompanying letter went like this.
And you wrote to the CEO of the parent company, right?
Yeah, I wrote to Mark Chester Burnell.
Great.
And I said, "Dear Sandy, it is certain that it occurs to you that we have mutual acquaintances. Otherwise, I could not have obtained your name and home address. I am an A-rated trial lawyer, admitted both in New York and Florida. Your subsidiary, Servco, is trying to save money by denying this claim, saying that my aunt is not medically in need of nursing services. All I am attempting to do is get the insurance policy benefits paid. Servco is responsible for paying my legal fees, and when we go to trial, will ultimately be required to pay all of the costs plus interest on the entire sum. I know that you are a gentleman and would not wish to have your own aunt's legitimate claim denied. In return, I wish to be a gentleman, and I will waive all of my fees and costs if you would be kind enough to order the payment of this claim."
Well, that was a very smart letter, you know, showing that you were also a gentleman.
You got to be creative. Well, about a week later, the phone rings. And he says, "Mr. Ress, this is Samuel Sherwood of Servco calling you from our Raleigh, North Carolina office. Man, who do you know? I'm instructed to honor Ida Lowenthal's claim in full and to work with you to assure that you are satisfied with our efforts."
Wow, great news. And how much did you collect?
The benefits were in excess of $375,000 just to the present, and the future benefits would probably be equally as high.
How about your legal fees?
A normal contingent fee would have been at least $125,000 just on the present day cash recovery, not the future benefits. Hmm. The guardianship judge, who had been criticized for cronyism when he awarded some of his political friends large attorney's fees, decided to use me as an example of how conservative he was. After all, I was from out of town. I had no political connections. I wasn't supporting him.
Right.
He awarded me a fee of $37,500, as I recall, and that included costs, which came to about $10 an hour for my time.
Wow. And what ultimately happened?
Ida couldn't go on forever. And about 3 months after the big check came in from Servco, while my wife and I were away, I think we were in Europe at the time, she died. When we returned from Europe after her death, we found an envelope with a note from Ida addressed to us, along with three vault box keys. And it had been buried with the paid bills. Mm. That's why we didn't see it.
Oh.
And the note said we were authorized to enter three vault boxes and gave their numbers at the Deutsche Bank in New York.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. What did you find?
The first big box contained crumpled money wrappers with old stiff rubber bands. Ida's accountant had access to this box, and the record showed that he had signed in and cleaned it out shortly after Ida's stroke.
Oh, my God.
The second box had the same money wrappers and rubber bands. There was no record of the accountant getting into the box, but it was cleaned out.
Wow, he just grabbed the cash and ran.
The third box contained three bank books with over $300,000 in each bank account. The deposits were all made around the same time in cash, going back to the 1970s. Ida had left her entire estate to Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital. They wound up with $1,600,000.
Wow.
They honored Ida, and after some intense negotiation, they created a nurse's lounge in memory of her in the pediatric section, with a dedication ceremony attended by the CEO of the hospital, and by engraving her name in the granite honor roll right next to the names of some fancy charitable trusts like the Rockefellers.
Wow, what a story. How did Ida get all that cash?
My wife and I still spend considerable time speculating how Ida could have accumulated over $1 million in cash. We also think of how Ida wanted to give us all her of her estate and what fools she thought we might be when we turned down over $1 million.
Yeah.
But it's done and it worked out just fine. And Ida's memorial and her good deeds are the only traces of her life.
Yeah, it's so sad. At least you were in her life and you were able to help, right?
Yeah, well, it's not over. We were in Europe when Ida died, and the funeral arrangements were made over the long-distance telephone. She was buried with her husband, Abe, in the Calverton National Cemetery. We were able to obtain a rabbi to officiate, but we weren't there, and there were no mourners, no friends, no relatives at the funeral to grieve. When we got back, we had the simple tombstone changed. All the tombstone had shown was her name. Rightfully, there should have been more. Then we made a pilgrimage to have the closure with Ida. I paid them, I think, $500 to have a new tombstone.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And where was she buried?
At the Calverton Military Cemetery. It's way out towards the end of Long Island, not far from Montauk Point. And the elaborate gates open, and there's a circular entry, and then wide tree-lined streets, flowering plants, and large landscaped hills covered with thousands of white marble headstones, all in a row. Even with the map, we needed guidance and a golf cart ride, and we finally found her in section 72, grave number 2602, and we laid flowers and a plant. We put down flowers, and her headstone now reads, Ida Lowenthal, September 1st, 1913 to June 13th, 2003, beloved wife, nurse, philanthropist.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it's quite unusual. So did she make it into the military cemetery because of her husband? Is that how?
Yeah. She was the wife of the
right.
Husband,
mm-hmm.
and who was the sergeant in the army.
Right.
And it's a highly unusual, maybe a unique tombstone, because I'll bet it's the only tombstone in any U.S. military cemetery that uses the word philanthropist.
Yeah.
I don't think there are many philanthropists buried with that on their tombstone in military service.
Yeah, good point.
So rest in peace, Ida, rest in peace. How did you get all that money, Ida?
It's still up. Yeah, that's a big question there. So, Lewis, here we go. What are we going to learn from this?
Well, here's the big message. The message is you never know. People wind up with these big estates, and you don't know how they get the money.
Mm-hmm.
The judge, there's a message about the courts there. The judge, I don't think, was really vetted.
No.
He was had a mean streak in him. He was an unhappy, angry man.
Yeah.
And instead of looking down at a paper and saying, you know, I wish I could help you, but I'm concerned about such and such, and being a gentleman,
right.
He was gruff and cruel, actually cruel and rude.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't speak well for the judiciary to have people like that. And he also happened to be black.
Oh.
And I don't think he was happy with me. No, there's all sorts of criteria for setting a fee, and I really earned it. You know, the likelihood of winning at the onset, who would take the case, how many lawyers rejected it,
right?
What your chances were, the amount recovered, the difficulty you had, the creativity it required to get the money,
mm-hmm.
and I really. Met all of the criteria, so I should have gotten a fee of at least $100,000. And
right.
So we didn't get it.
Hmm.
We talk about Ida. How did she get the money? I know how we figured out how she got the money.
Oh, yeah.
It was the head of this big company was traveling with her, and evidently was having an affair with her.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And that's it. He said, if you treat me right, I'll give you $1 million.
Wow.
And he meant it, and he could afford it. And she started to look happy and was wearing nice clothes.
There you go, yep. I knew there was something there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I figure.
Mm-hmm.
I figure.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can walk down the street and suddenly, bingo. Get hit with a stroke.
I know.
Come from out of nowhere.
Life is crazy.
You learn that how dangerous it is when you have frailty, when you're old and you're senile or submissive or disabled.
People
take
advantage.
How easy it is to take advantage.
It's horrible.
Of you. And what how little undue influence it takes to get you to do things. The licensed practical nurse, I'm sure, took the jewelry and the silver and the cash and the documents, whatever was there.
What a crook. And people have no conscience.
What an opportunity to steal. There's no one there. You have the key. And the only witness, which is sleeping or incompetent or can't communicate, is lying there. And you have carte blanche. We found a check that was – we got a tax return for Ida, and it showed that she had income of so many $6,000 or $8,000, and we couldn't find the income.
Hmm.
We called up the company and said, well, we wrote you a check, and the check came through, was cashed. Well, the check was forged by the boyfriend of the LPN out of New Jersey. It was cashed in New Jersey.
Wow.
And we found that. But, of course, nobody wants to prosecute, and you can't. Who's going to testify? And how my wife is and I going to come up from Florida to testify against this guy? So he stole that money. Oh, the chances. And the accountant. I know my aunt told me that the accountant wanted to go to the bank to get $5,000 to pay IRS. She gave him the key and authorization, and he cleaned out the box. I'm convinced there was over $300,000 in that box just from the number of wrappers that I found in there.
My God.
So they were all $100 wrappers, and there were a lot of them.
Wow.
So that's what goes on. You needed to have a power of attorney. You have to have a living will, and you have to have a medical surrogate. All those things, I'm going to repeat it. Because if you're listening, whoever you are, the three people that are listening today,
it's very important.
Make sure that you have a power of attorney to someone you trust to look after you in case you become incompetent to look after yourself, to sign your checks and to manage your affairs.
And is that just like is there like a form that someone can download and then
revocable power of attorney?
Or do you need a lawyer to be able to do that? Or
I would suggest you go to a lawyer, and then you need a living will. And that, the living will, and it says that in the event you can pull the plug under certain circumstances, and you have to have a medical surrogate who can make medical decisions for you if you're incapable of making them yourself. Suppose you have to have surgery, and they want to consent to the surgery, and you're out. You're non compos mentis.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if, let's say, like your parent is alive or your spouse is alive, you still need to have that.
Yeah, right. They may not have the authority.
Oh, wow.
And the hospital may want to see something in writing.
Hmm.
And the same thing with becoming the personal representative or getting rid of the I had to take a course and to be a trustee. And if you have the documents, you can just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much better.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell you the story about Barbara DiTullio, I don't know if I've told you that one. Barbara DiTullio was in nursing homes. And her girlfriend, she gave her girlfriend $20,000 worth of her jewelry to hold while she was having an operation or in the hospital. And the girlfriend said, well, that's a gift, and didn't want to give it back. And Barbara had a big fight with her. She finally got it back. When Barbara died, I couldn't find the jewelry. I found, I was her personal representative. I found all kinds of stuff. Jewelry boxes and things, and no jewelry. It was gone. And people had the key. The housekeeper had the key to her place, and her girlfriend had the key, and she had an attendant who she left $20,000 to in her will, and he had the key.
Mm-hmm.
So I was concerned. Here's a story about, elder care. I'm going to talk to you about elder care. In Vero Beach, where I've been living in a hotel, a recent case was reported in the local newspaper, and it concerned a detective, Ken Barrett, who wrote a letter to the judge, Dan Kavanaugh, wanting to know, telling how bad this woman was. Her name was Chiquita McGee. Chiquita McGee was a nurse, a caregiver, mm-hmm. nursing assistant. And she moved into the house, I guess, with Alfred and Michelina Martinelli. And they lived in this fancy area that I was telling you about, John's Island,
right.
where you mm-hmm. have to be a member of the club and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out, they questioned, I guess it was a relative, questioned her bank account. They had to hire a forensic accountant to come in. It's expensive. You're looking at $10,000. And the forensic accountant finally found over $540,000 had been taken by this lady, by Chiquita McGee, and for fraudulent transactions and using her credit card and writing checks and so on.
Wow.
It was used for luxury hotel stays, casino junkets, plastic surgery, cruises, automobile repairs, and exotic car rentals.
Wow.
So she pleaded guilty, and she was just sentenced. She was facing up to 45 years with a minimum of 37 months. The judge gave her 12 years in prison and 10 years probation after she gets out of prison.
Oh, wow. Well, at least she was, you know.
Yeah, these victims need care and compassion
yeah.
and love, and they trust you. And mm-hmm. the aide always says, well, she made a gift to me. I'm doing extraordinary work. It's her money. She can do what she wants with it, and she loves me, and she wants me to have it. So these are the problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's very, very bad. There's in Miami, I had a case where a 91-year-old doctor became senile, and he was living on Miami Beach alone. His wife had passed away. And a lady, a housekeeper from El Salvador, came in, and she told all the people that were calling that he was too ill to talk to
them.
Oh,
you told me about this.
Yeah,
yeah, I remember.
And right, mm-hmm. and the children, he told them that he didn't want anything to do with them anymore,
mm-hmm.
and they tried to visit, and she wouldn't let him in. And winds up, she got him to send her kid to college and make – she took him to an attorney, and they drew a will. And she was
yep.
the beneficiary of the will with her son. And when the children came down to go, you know, to set aside the will, the attorney says, wait a minute, I drew that will. He sat there in my office. He was fine. He justified the will that he drew. He had to,
mm-hmm.
or he'd get disbarred. And so you have an adverse witness right off the start. And then the woman said, he wanted me to have it. He loved me, told me he loved
wow.
me. He wanted to marry me. And I wouldn't marry him, but he gave me all his money. So
yikes.
Then you have to try to set it aside. Usually they settle those cases.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a terrible, terrible thing. There is, 10% of the elders experience abuse. And I can tell you what to look for. You know, if you have someone living, let's say, in New York and you're in Florida or vice versa, and you go visit them, look for cuts, burns, bruises, welts, dehydration, you know, physically.
Mm-hmm.
Malnutrition, lack of food, water, or utilities. See if they have fear, anxiety, or agitation, or anger. See if they've been isolated. See if they're depressed or ambivalent. See if they've been neglected, if there's unsafe living conditions. Body odor.
Mm-hmm.
Check for body odor. Look and see if their clothing is dirty, what their hair is like, if they have weight loss or bed sores. See if there's lack of medical or personal care. Look at the eyeglasses and the dentures and make sure they're clean and they're there, and that they have to have them. See if doctors have visited. Talk to them and see if there's cognitive impairment or confusion. See if they wander or if they're socially isolated. Those are the things, self-neglect, inability to manage their own affairs. Well, that's not enough to make them incompetent to draw a will.
Mm-hmm.
The Florida courts have been very funny in elder care. They say the fact that somebody can't manage their own affairs doesn't mean they can't decide how they're going to give away their money, their assets. So they have people signing wills, and they say if they're competent to sign a will, know where they are, who they are, the date, and so on,
right.
Then they can give it to anyone they want. Huh. And that's freedom for the elderly. I think that's sort of crazy.
Yeah.
Because there are natural people, that natural recipients of the estate. So if you have children and you give it to the nurse, that's kind of be an implication, some kind of an inference.
Right.
And they don't have that in Florida. But if you find any of this, you call, there's a hotline. Call the Florida Department of Elder Affairs. And most states have these. Mm-hmm. Florida Department of Elder Affairs. And there's a Florida abuse hotline.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that.
Report okay.
And the abuse. I mean, they hit, push, shake, beat, yell. Some of these in the nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
Verbal harassment, coercive behavior and intimidation. And sometimes adult children do it, sometimes grandchildren, sometimes friends, neighbors, or in-home healthcare providers do it. So everyone can do it.
Yeah, anyone.
And can intimidate somebody. Say, Grandma, if you don't pay me, I'm going to do this, and you're going to die alone. And we've had that in my family, too.
Oh.
If you don't sign this will, you're going to die alone.
Jeez.
Okay, and you look for unusual transfer of assets, inability to pay bills, forged signatures, personal belongings that are missing, borrowing or lending money, extraordinary gifts. Then there are scams by third parties, like lottery investments and that sort of stuff. Guardianship, money missing, suspicious loans, lines of credit, gifts. Guardians who have conflicts of interest, sexual abuse, that sort of stuff. Okay.
Yeah, no, a lot of things to consider and watch for, and
right.
be informed about. You know, not just in the later years in life, but you know, when you're young and you're capable, to keep this in mind for the future.
I looked on only 1 in 15 or 1 in 24 cases of abuse are reported, because it takes a witness. You don't have witnesses.
Yeah.
It's tough. Anyhow.
And then they'll say, oh, no, it's just they don't know what they're saying. Like, it's the medication. They're making up things. Like,
right.
I don't know what she's talking about. You know, they'll like.
Right.
They'll put the elder's word as like, oh, no, don't listen to them. I don't know what they're saying. I'm not doing any of those things.
Right. If the custodian, if the nurse tries to keep you from speaking with the elder person alone,
mm-hmm.
watch out.
Red flag, yeah.
Because that's a red flag.
Definitely.
Okay, so does that help you?
Yes. Wonderful information for everyone, for all our listeners.
Yeah. I think Florida law needs to be reexamined, but I'm always at odds with the existing law.
Yeah.
So... I hope that's helpful to you. And if you have people who are and it's sure it's going to happen to you. You have
a mother
who's not well, and there's going to be a time when you're going to need help. And make sure that the help doesn't get the hands on the assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay?
Definitely. Thank you so much, Louis. Really
you're
appreciate
welcome.
You.
Thank you for listening. We are excited to announce that Louis now has his own blog. Visit louisres.com to get insightful commentary to the Miami Memoirs podcasts, along with an analysis of current events, as only Louis can provide.